My name is Angel, and I'm an addict.
Angel.
That's a good topic, because that's how I got here. A practicing addict helped me. Before coming to this fellowship, you know, I like to use, and that's my primary purpose, and I don't be responsible for my children. And they must, you know, be locked up in a room, and I must tell them, hold up, wait a minute, I'll be right back. Or I must, like, rent out a room and tell them they can't go in that room, because somebody in that room, matter of fact, get out your room and come in my room. And my house is not a house, it's a crack house. And I must take all food stamps and sell them to the dope man. And at the end, he had to take me to the store. The dope man had to take me to the store. I am real nervous. And as I was using, my children got taken from me through Child Protective Service. And I kept using, and that showed me how powerless I am over drugs and alcohol. I did not care that they had my children. I was happy, because I mean I could smoke some more and snort some more dope and drink some Cisco or gin. And when the Child Protective Service went out the door, I actually clapped my feet. I was like, yes, because I had some more crack. And I had a straw full of dope. And this girl was upstairs in one of my rooms, and we had a plate full of residue. And I stayed high for months. And a lady kept coming to my house and saying, Miss Angel, you know you got to go to court. You know you got to get your children back. Your family came to court to get your children. You need to get yourself together. And I kept telling that lady, I'm going next Tuesday. And she came that Tuesday, and I still had the stem in my back pocket with the same clothes on saying, I'm going next Tuesday. And my aunt used to come see me, and my children still love me in spite of all this smoke in the house. She used to bring the children to the door and say, look, your children want to see you. But I'm so stuck, man. I'm like, tell her, don't come in. You can't come in. But my children love me so much, they wanted to see their mom. And I'm caught up in the grip. But one day, June the 20th, my baby father was sitting on the front porch. And this same girl was upstairs smoking crack. It was 5:30 in the morning, and I called my grandmother, and I said, Grandma. And never got to say anything else. That's all I said. And my grandmother came and got me and took me to detox. That was in 2001. I went into detox. And when I went into detox, they told me I was having a stroke. My mouth was twisted. My arm was tingling, but I remember kept trying to put that stem in that twisted mouth. Powerless. You talking about somebody helping me, a recovering addict helped me, because she told me she was going to call the police on me if I ain't come home one night. She did. When the police was in my house, Child Protective Service, Housing Department, and they look around my house telling me how dirty my house was. I had a bag of clothes in a corner. I had a pot of spaghetti in the refrigerator, and they said I was unsanitary. I just cooked it yesterday. Somebody just gave it to me. Mm. I thought I was, you know, all right. And I was just looking cute, had two fingernails done. And I had a scarf, and my scarf had to meet, you know, match my jeans. And I thought I was the best trick on the street, because I boost a lot. So I kept having things. Just to look good for the trick to get me first. Because when I trick, I don't even, you know your nickname. We just doing it. So I ain't confused who I am when I use. But then when I need to share this, when I went in a detox, they asked me, what do I want to do? And I was so scared and fearful, I knew that if I ain't do something different, that I was going to die. This ain't had nothing to do with the children when I went into detox. I shared y'all from my experience from doing some step work with my sponsor when I used. My children don't mean nothing to me, so I ain't coming to the program to get them back. And I didn't even go to detox for my grandma. Because I remember 16 years ago going to detox and stayed clean for 6 months. And as soon as I went home, it was a plate and a razor blade. And that was a trigger for me. I was like, shoot, we need to put something on that razor blade. No, I forgot where I just came from. And I didn't surrender. So I didn't come in for no different reasons. This time I came in for me. And then I went into another program, 4 to 6 month program. And I remember in that program they told us to go to the doctor, get your teeth cleaned, get your teeth fixed, take care of your health. Because when I'm using, I'm not doing none of that stuff. It takes too much time to catch the bus. And I'm from Washington, D.C., from here to D.C. General, because a trick can be there. I think I'm going to miss something, and that take too much time. Some shit can be happening. So I'm not going to be responsible for my health. So when it's time for me to be responsible for my health and go take some tests, it's HIV. And when they told me I got HIV, I told my counselor, you know, you got that EBT card. At the time I was on food stamps and welfare, you need to give me that card because I got a reason now. She didn't give me that card, so I had to rock. And I had to stick and stay in that program. Then a week later they told me, you know, your son we took from you at 3 months old, they took him, when the Child Protection Service took him. You know, my family went to court to get him, but they couldn't. They had to take him to hospital, sick children, Bunker Hill Road. My baby stayed in the hospital for his first 2 years. I never seen his first walk at home. So in that whole process, my son was sick, and they told me, the baby you got full-blown AIDS, and you got to feed him out his stomach. I'm like, fuck it. I really got a reason to use now. Shit. So I called myself leaving the program. I called a dope boy and told him, meet me on the corner. And when I tried to walk out the place to go to the corner, my grandmother rolled down the street around my aunt. And I don't understand how she lived in Super Maryland. And she ended up on that side of that drug treatment center street. Where I'm walking down the street trying to go meet the dope man, she put me back in the program. I didn't get time to deviate to smoke a cigarette. I rocked in that program and I had to sign a contract because my behavior was real off. I cussed everybody out in the group. I cussed the counselors out, the director of the program. I had to sign a contract. Half foot was in and out the door, but I stayed. Because if you know, I'm talking about a recovering addict coming in my picture now. I'm talking about a recovering addict working there. She guided me. She rocked me. She held my hand. For the first 2 years in that program, she just rocked with me every day, held my hand, told me it's going to be all right. So this before I get to a meeting. But then my first meeting, the lady that's sitting in this room now, Monica, she took me to my first meeting. And I stayed in that meeting. And I looked at everybody funny because I got a motive. Just coming off the street from a treatment facility, and my behavior is, what can you do for me? Well, what do you want from me? So when they start giving up hugs, I'm like, oh, okay, what's up? Huh? But I kept on coming back because I was too scared to use, and then I got an ego. And I need to prove to y'all that I was not going to use because I had accomplished a little bit clean time then. But how about going to court? And the Child Protection Service still coming to my house with the facility I was at, Rama, because they took my house. And I'm talking about how one added help of me was, she said, I need to write you a letter sent to the police department, let them know that you was in a program, take the letter down house and let them know you're in the program because you lost your Section 8. I was like, okay, I can get me a house. I can work. So I had all these goals and dreams for myself before I even got them. But I was clean. And so I did do that. And because somebody got shot at my house. And posed if I would have been there with my children. So they gave me my Section 8 certificate back. I stayed in a program. Then I went and furthered on my treatment. I went into a house for people with HIV. Because I need to deal with that. But I also need to deal with my addiction. Because if I don't deal with my addiction, I ain't going to deal with the HIV. And I need to always keep that up front, step one. Because if I'm using, it's not going to make it better. It's going to make me die. So what I did was I went to a meeting and they told me to get a sponsor. And I got a sponsor. They told me to get a network and I got a network. They told me to get into the steps. And I had done the 12 steps. And I'm on my second cycle now. I'm on the 7th step. And a lot of times, me looking at me, it's not easy, but it's easy me looking at you. And I got to look at my behavior, my attitude, and be all right with it and pray to my higher power. And I pray to you all people, because a lot of times if I had expectations of y'all, God let me down. And who I know won't let me down is my God. I'm talking about coming into me and sharing some pain. A lot of times my pain helped build up some character. I'm talking about going to court. I remember having 8 months clean and the judge told me, oh, that was my last day of going to court. They awarded me all my children. But I'm overwhelmed, I'm scared, I'm fearful, and I'm not using. And you talking about, you gonna give me 4 children when I was smoking crack? How is I'm gonna do this? So I'm so overwhelmed, I'm geeked out in the courtroom, and my psychiatrist, she meet me at the courthouse down Indiana Avenue, and she like, look, I need to meet you to 6 North over George Washington Hospital, you know, Georgetown Hospital, to the sidewalk, because I'm gone now, clean. So I stayed over there for 2 months, clean, because I had to get me together. I was scared, y'all. I was overwhelmed. What did I want? Did I want to harm my children? It was about me. I don't know if I was going to be able to be all right with raising them children clean. So I had to go clean in the psych ward. So that was new to me. But I didn't know I was in the psych ward until after I got out. And I get to a meeting, and one of the guys was in the psych ward with me. He was considered real crazy. But he wasn't that crazy because he wakes me up every morning and say, Angel, come on, you got to eat. Or come on, cigarette time. But one day I get in a meeting, I'm out the place, and I see him. And they say, Crazy Bird. I'm like, oh, shut. That was my man. He wasn't that crazy. He looked out for me, man. He let me see where I was at, clean. And I went on continuing with my program. And then I remember dealing with them children, man. That means that I had to use my sponsors in some other areas. I'm talking about she couldn't just guide me with the steps or the program for us. We're not talking about drugs and alcohol no more, Angel. Mm-mm. We're not even talking about that name. After the second step, we ain't even talking about that name. Huh? We're talking about you, God, and how you treat other people and forgiveness. We're talking about some integrity and some character. So that means she had to teach me how to talk to my children. She, matter of fact, she had to teach me how to cook a roast, because all I know is oodle noodles and hot dogs. That means she had to teach me how to be a lady. Oh, Angel, you ain't got to do that. But I like to find out, do I have to do that? And she just let me find out. And then I can get some of my experience how you get out of that one. That's how we talk about therapeutic added help with another. When I'm caught up in a grip. And it ain't got to be about drugs and alcohol. And that's not what I'm sharing about. I'm talking about my mind. I'm talking about my thinking. So my sponsor had to tell me, you need to think differently. Your way of thinking is harming yourself and other people. So a lot of times I got to call my network and tell them exactly where I'm at. And they got to tell me something different. And then my sponsor got to tell me something different. And I got to weigh that thing out. Because when I'm thinking, you already know it ain't right, but I might think it's right. I really might think it's just right. So as we going on, I'm coming up on 6 years, and as the time been going on, it ain't even been that bad. But I would say it's bad. And it ain't, because I ain't wake up ill, vomiting, in a fetal position, off of dope, and keep geeking because I ain't got no crack. The dick is up crawling over me and washing my head about 10 times every time I take a hit. And I'm talking about after being here, how I done took an emotional bottom in here. Because I will make other things my God. Someone had another Eddie had to help me in that area. Angel, look at you. What part you played in it? And I remember going in the meet one day and I seen my baby father. And he was sharing all this stuff, talking about he's sick and with the AIDS. My man say, that motherfucker gave it to me. He talking about he's sick and I got a baby. I'm gone. So I ain't know that you weren't supposed to share behind people and cuss them out in the meeting at the time. As soon as he put his hand down, I raised my hand up. Man, I laid him out from A to Z. I took the whole meeting up, the meeting closed. But from that day to this day, I started praying for him. And my sponsor told me to pray for health, prosperity, and happiness. That's the seven-step resentment prayer. The same I want for myself, I want for him. And it got better that I can have a conversation with him, even though he's over DC jail. But he do pay dearly for his son. How about when he wants to see his son before he got locked up? Do you, like, have a conversation with him? And let it just be a conversation. Don't have a resentment, because my thing is like this, okay? You can ready to come over my house, you want to see your son, I think you need to cook, clean, bathe. Matter of fact, I need my walls painted. I need everything done, because I'm doing a payback. No, it's past expectations. It's like I need to pay you back for everything. You need to do some work. And then when you get some money, I'm taking all your money. And I'm not giving you nothing. Cause ain't nothing going on, cause I still got resentment of what you did to me, cause he knew he had the virus and he didn't tell me. But then, the fourth step, it talks about what part I played in. The part I played in is angel and unprotected sex. So what that mean, that let him off the hook. I was like, God damn. Because I needed to blame somebody else. And my sponsor helped me with that. You're talking about therapeutic one ad after the other. And at that time, it was my sponsor. And I got two sponsees. And they, like, help me when I'm caught up in a grip. Because I think I can't get nobody. And I'm still with the same person I thought I couldn't get nobody. And I've been caught up so bad. And I'm getting ready to share exactly my experience. I'm so caught up that I got a drilling and a power off of people. It was like you in a relationship with one, but I'm like a spider in some other areas. So I pick somebody else up, and the next day I don't want to speak to them, and I'm still with my boo. It ain't had nothing to do with them, it had something to do with me. Because I really thought I couldn't get nobody, so I was getting a power drilling off of two motherfuckers. And then I end up taking an emotional body shot. Then I had to walk in a meeting and watch these two people. So you talking about hurting other people. So I looked in their eyes and I said, I can't do this no more. My sponsor told me, stop. Just stop. I don't know when it happened, but it stopped. I got a lot of months underneath my belt that I ain't done that type of stuff. Huh? That I can see the people and just say, hey, how you doing? I already know the body movement starts first. I start off when I get a feeling before I get the feeling. So as soon as I get ready to get the feeling, I just say, hey, how you doing? And I move myself. Because I will fuck around and say 10:30. So my sponsor had to help me with that. Look, angel, you ain't got to do that off of a feeling. Get to the exact nation. Look at your part. You harming other people with that bullshit. And what happened was I walked in the meeting, I looked at somebody's eyes, and I seen the harm they had. And they was hurt. Hurt people hurt people. That's the first time I ever seen that. Huh? Because I hurted somebody. Then I seen a hurt that I hurted them in their eyes. like, damn. I mean, I had to go to them and like, look, I apologize. I'm not the one for you. I manipulated. I lied. I'm sorry. I can't do it. We just going to be friends. And I'm still with my friend. But the other people, I had to do that because I lied. I'm manipulated. And what I was doing is getting a power and a drilling off of both of them. Because I really thought I couldn't get nobody, so it really had something to do with the HIV. Deep. This ain't had nothing to do with the men. Because men ain't my problem. How about when I had a year clean, I come in the rooms, and I say, I want to feel it. And I'm in a relationship with this girl. And I said, shit, this shit feel real good. But I ain't like her like that. To be my boo, but she just made me feel good. And I mean, when she stole from me, and my son stole from me 2 days later, I want to put a 10-year-old out, but I ain't want to put her out. And my sponsor helped me to see that. She was like, okay, you need to put the people out your house. So shit, she got to do me first, then I put her out. So that right there helped me to see me. And then it let me see every time I get in any area of my life, it ain't bad talking them. This for me to get better. All this stuff is for Angel to get better. I keep telling y'all, pain Bill Carlton. A lot of times I supposedly went through all that stuff just to see me. See what you working with, Angel. So right in the day, me and a young lady, a good friend, say, how you doing? We talk about the steps. That's the only thing we can talk about, man. That's the only thing we could talk about, and she was there for a reason. She helped me with my children at a time of need. I remember being sick. And she took my children to the hospital where I couldn't. So she was there for a reason. That's a therapeutic act going to help with another with no strings attached. But sometimes I like to have a fit attached. Then I remember my third year, my son. Stay locked up. My 18-year-old. By me going through all this stuff, my son, he had an understanding of Narcotics Anonymous. He came to my anniversaries. He came to a meeting with me. And he was like, I'm not an addict. But today's date, my son say I'm his hero. He over D.C. jail. My son get ready to do a rack of time. My house got raided last year, and you talking about a therapeutic addict going helping her up. When the people came in, I was on the toilet. But they didn't come in for me, because I remember the last raid I was in, I was pregnant. And I was worried about what was on the table. So this time, this raid, it wasn't for me. But when they came and got my son. And you talking about a therapeutic addict helping another, I called people in my network, and they came to my house and helped me clean my house up. Help me get my door frame back up. Help me get everything together because I'm disturbed, right? And how powerless I am when I had to go to court for my son and the judge asked for character letters and one of the letters had to be about me. And you talking about a therapeutic addict helping another addict. Matter of fact, every addict wrote the letter. One of them was for me and five of them was for him. Churches, organizations, and everybody was recovering at it. After the judge reconsidered, his time was he was facing 25. But after he read every character letter, he looked at mine and read mine. So that means in his psychological evaluation, he talks about the mother on crack and her own. But then we talk about today's day. So in my character letter, it was different. So after he read all that, he read the health thing because you know they had to put in there the mother was HIV positive, the little sibling was AIDS. They had to put all that stuff in because this is some stuff that affected my son when he did his own evaluation. So I can't be mad. I had to own up to it. Two things I got to own up is this. You taught your son how to lie, steal, cheat, steal cars. So when he did all that, you can't get mad. You got to look at your pump. So now my son is locked up. So that means I had to condition myself to be ready when I go in the courthouse at 8. So that means I had to be in a meeting by 7 that morning. To condition myself. So when I go and show up, The judge said 25, but after I left out of there, he got 39 months. But he got all that. They come and get him and take him to D.C. jail just the other day. So now he got 58 more indictments in D.C. And you talking about another addict. And for me, they had to give me some information on that. So I got 3 sons and 1 daughter. My daughter beautiful. And I don't keep my daughter. And I had to be honest with my sponsor. Look, she said, why you don't want her? Because I'm selfish. I don't feel like doing that pink and white shit and them bow rats. I might harm her, so let her stay where she at. My aunt taking good care of her. I got the boys. Put your Timberland boots on, let's roll. So that's the honest I can be. Why would I try to get her because of N.A., in the name of N.A. because I'm clean? Just because I'm clean, why should I get her? Because I'm so selfish, I like to look good all the time. Even when I go to sleep, I put on a cute little outfit on. And y'all ain't seen me with the wig, my wig caught to the side. It's some shit going on. It's the first time I had ever been out. They be like, oh, shit. Ain't nothing going on with Angel. They know me. People in D.C. know when I got a wig on, it's something going on. But lately I was wearing a wig and wasn't nothing going on. Just so I ain't feel like doing my hat. So now I took the wig down, put a perm in it, and ain't nothing going on. But I'm going to say this in close. I got 5 minutes. Through all that, a therapeutic addict won't help him. Someone told me to go to school. So I went to school, the Katie program, took up HIV education. So I'm an HIV motivational speaker at Georgetown University. Also, somebody told me to go to school and take up addiction counseling. And I'm a registered addiction counselor, and I work in the field with people just like me. How about where I work at? The sisters and the guys. And I run one of the houses. And they're HIV positive, substance abuse, and been locked up. So how about when I go to work every day, I got to do one-on-one with each one of them. And then I got to monitor them and look at them and talk to them and do little hours with them. And then when they be caught up in the grip, if I don't tell them who I am and show them some hope, like one-on-one, and I had to do that several times. The girl was cussing me out at work. She was like, you don't understand. You ain't never used. You ain't HIV positive. I was like, okay. I was like. I was like, took my glasses off and said, come on, sister. Can we like talk in the room? And I like told her my story, man. I ain't even had to share what I just shared here. I just said 3 things. I am HIV positive. I've been in a program for almost 6 years. June the 20th, I dollar 6 years, right?
Yeah.
And guess what? I have a DC number, so what's up? And you could take your medicine, I'm undetectable.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to say this in closing. Therapeutic added one helping the other. Yesterday, I wasn't feeling well because I like to work a lot, and I did a lot of overtime. The last 3 months, I've just been doing overtime. So my check is looking real good, right? I get a check when I come back. I'm so greedy, I got money in the bank. Matter of fact, they say, you want your check Friday, so now I keep it. Because I'm geeked out in another area, right? But how about my body broke down yesterday, coming down here? I felt it breaking down. And I try to, like, put that image in. I'm like, okay, I can do this thing. My friend was like, you all right? I was like, yeah, boy, I'm all right. We can do this. And I get here for 15 minutes, and I'm like, get ready to collapse. I said, guess what? Give me my car keys. I'm leaving you here. I can't do this. I had to stand up for me. And see, I wanted to say, boy, I'm going to hang out with you. I'm going to go to a meeting. You know how we do the boot thing. I can't do the boot thing right now. Well, I got to go in the room. So I stayed in the room all night, all day, till the day. And I feel a lot better, right? I'm talking about telling people my network that Angel ain't feeling well. My body just broke down. And the good part about it is that when I go to the doctor, he don't even talk about me about HIV. Talk to me about stress. So I already know God working. I remember when they told my baby was gonna live at 6 months. My baby's 6 years old. And I hope I gave somebody some hope that you ain't got to use. And get somebody in your pocket, even if it's one person. And get a sponsor. And do some step work. And don't act like you in an A. It's a competition, like you even gonna get an A or F. Huh? Just do it. Huh? And don't use. Thanks for letting me share.
Maurice McGregor covering that. That was a beautiful message from Angel. You know, I tell y'all what, let's give her one more hand. Well, we're going to keep on going. I'm going to introduce you all to Frank J. from D.C.
Grateful recovering addict named Frank. Today I know God truly works. Today I know God truly works. I'm going to give you a little bit about myself. First time I decided to change my life around, I thought I was at the end of my rope. I was sleeping in the park. I was homeless. I slept in the bushes. And one night I was going down there to go to sleep. And I passed out. In the area where I was living at the time, in Riverdale, Maryland, they had park police that rode horses. And by the time the park police saw me, he smelled this pungent smell. And he probably thought I was dead. So what he did was approach me cautiously and allowed the horse reins to come down. And when the horse reins came down, the horse said, I'm glad y'all like that. Because when that horse did, slob came out his mouth. And the slob came around my face. And because of my inability to feed myself, I smelled the park police had fed that horse green apples. And my tongue inadvertently wrapped around my mouth and tasted that spit. But I was so hopeless and helpless and wanted that police so desperately to carry me to jail, somewhere familiar, where I could get something to eat. Something warm, a place to lay down, showers, hell, they was going to cut my hair. Because I had lice in them. But he said, I'm not going to do that. Today I know that was God working. He said, I'm not going to do that for you. You're going to do this for yourself. You're going to leave this park. Didn't you hear me say I was homeless? He said, I don't care, but you're going to leave this park. So I decided to pack my little belongings, go across the street between the 7-Eleven and the Crown gas station to proceed to live in a cardboard box like a goddamn animal. And one day, I prayed. I had had enough. And I prayed to God. And I thought at the time it was a sincere prayer. And I said, God, if you love me, please send me some relief. He said, fool, get up. Go in front of the 7-Eleven. I walked around there and I seen two familiar faces. I seen one guy who was an HIV drug user who I thought was worse than me. And then I seen another a crackhead that was just like me. But they're only different. They had got their golden skin color back. And the one who was shooting dope had a brand new shiny car. And I said, man, what the hell are y'all doing? Because I knew they wasn't doing what I was doing. And they said, man, it's a place. First they said, you don't have to live like that even if you wanted to. And he said, you can find you some help. He said, we're going to let you in on a secret. They gave me some directions down the street on Kenilworth Avenue. It was a men's rehabilitation center. And they said in my state they could not refuse me. Let me tell you, they refused me. But by this time, I had my mother with me. And my mother pleaded with the administrators. And they didn't answer her plea. But they gave her an ultimatum. They said, if you allow him to go home with you and come back in 7 days clean, we will welcome him with open arms. So they gave me some instructions. They told me to go there, look at Jerry Springer, whatever the hell I needed to do, to stay there, but do not go out the house. And my mother looked at me and she said, son, if you go out that goddamn house, you're never coming back. For some reason, I thought she meant it. So I did what I had to do. And I got into that program. And them guys welcomed me. The first thing they did was gave me that goddamn haircut. And I was all right with that. Because I came in, one side matted up, and the other shit looked like I stuck my finger in an electric socket. They taught me how to clean myself, take baths, showers. And they taught me how to live. But with my ungrateful ass, I got into a relationship. And I thought I was all right. And she told me one day that my natural son could not come to our house, which we had gotten together. And I said, I'll show you. And on Thanksgiving of 2000, I took a drink. On Christmas Eve 2000, I smoked crack. Christmas Day, I was in prison. New Year's Eve, I had lost the company truck, the BMW, smoked the house, the children, and the family dog. I was right back out there. Less than 45 days to work. What I had accomplished in 3.5 years, I had smoked based on me not being able to deal with rejection. See, y'all said this was an inside job. I heard that shit, but I didn't think it applied to me. Because, see, I was successful. I had some shit, some things. See, listening to all that sociable acceptability doesn't equal recovery. That shit didn't register. Because I had mine. You was just mad because you didn't get yours. That was that fucked up stinking thinking. Because I just told you what I did with that shit. It didn't even last that long. 45 days. The BMW, the Maxima, the two company trucks, the business, the house, all that shit went in a crack pipe. And I proceeded to do that for approximately 1 year. And in that year, because I had been coming into the rooms, I heard people say things that had happened to them that had not happened to me. Them little boys was not whipping my ass. Well, I'll let you know, when I smoked crack the last time, they whooped the shit out of me. And my tough ass needed that whooping. I got shot 2 times. I got stabbed 8 times. I robbed a crack dealer, got in the ambulance, and had the crack in the grip of my hand. My back was bleeding profusely because I had been stabbed 8 times. And the ambulance driver, the attendant in the ambulance seen my hand, and they said, we seen that before. We gonna stop this ambulance, open the door, and you throw that shit out. Well, they did what they said, and my arm did like this, but my fingers did not open. They told me the police would be waiting for me because I was a victim of gunshot wounds, multiple gunshot wounds, and stabbing wounds. That shit didn't make sense to throw that good crack away. So when they, after going to the hospital and getting hooked up to all these machines because they drained the infection off of me and let me go in 3 days, that good crackhead motherfucker. It wasn't in my hand, but I hid that shit with. A crackhead with crack will smoke crack. And that's what the fuck I did. Smoke that crack. But you need to know, when I went to the hospital, I went on that cycle for approximately a year. But 2 months before the year ended, God was so gracious and afforded me a precious gift. He didn't give me one baby, but he gave me two. He gave me a set of twins. And for the first time, this grown, so-called grown-ass man accepted the responsibility. I could actually see what crack was doing to people other than me. That old myth that I had believed I wasn't doing that to nobody but me died with the birth of these twins. Because when God seemed fit to let the crackhead away from the tape, see, they were born July the 15th. My clean date is November the 4th. So I went on for a little bit. But when he received, when they were born, I had just robbed somebody. I was real good at robbing people to get crack. That was the quickest way I could come up with crack. And I didn't rob people for money. I robbed crack dealers, usually 13 to 14 years old. I got to share that part. So when I shook his little ass down... got that crack and came back to the house that I was staying in. Before I went out the house, I heard the girl that I was living with that was giving birth to my twins say she had the doo-doo. So she called me in agony when I was going out the door. And what she did was had birth of those twins. My son was born on the floor. Premature. My daughter was born in the toilet. When I got back to the house, my, at the time, stepson, 10-year-old, delivered those babies. And called 911. And when I got in the house, I smelled the pungent smell. But a crackhead with crack will smoke crack. And that's what the fuck I did. And I smoked that crack and I smoked that crack. It was a nice amount. Because I smoked for a few days. Then all of a sudden I said, where is everybody? By this point, I wasn't going to the bathroom. I was pissing out the back door. So I never went upstairs. And all these little baby flies started coming down the steps. Because all the afterbirth was upstairs. Nobody had cleaned it up. I was the only motherfucker there, and I was too busy smoking crack. Let the truth be known, I didn't even realize that the kids had been born. Somebody knocked on the door and said, man, you still in here? And I said, yeah. They said, you know you had twins? I said, how the fuck I had twins? They said, no, man, you're the father of twins. I couldn't get out of that. And God seemed fit to tie me away from the crack table. And allowed me to go see. Now, this is a month after she'd given birth. This started on the 15th of July. This was August when I went to see these kids. And when I went to the hospital to see these kids, I saw these two glass boxes, what looked like glass or tennis shoe boxes, a little larger. They were incubators. And I said, this was a month later. And I seen my son. And you could put my son in my hand and his feet down here and his head up here and you still can see the outline of my hand. And I looked over in the other one and I said, why they got the other box over there? And they said, your daughter is in there. And I looked again and I saw this little teeny baby in that incubator. You can take her and put her from feet to head and still see the outline of my fingers. And I said, my God, what have I done? That was the first time I accepted responsibility for causing wreckage in someone else's life. And I looked up to the sky and I prayed to God. And I said, God, if you send me the people and directions, I'll be the man you intend me to be. I had no idea. I was praying to God to end my crack use. Because a very short time later, I robbed another crack dealer. By this time, I had left that area and moved out to right by Riverdale. It was in Mount Rainier in a rooming house on 37th Street. And when I lived in that rooming house, me and this guy that I used to drink with, drunk about 105 beers, and this is the last time I got out. We drunk them 105 beers. And we went back to the store, and I had left 18-pack in his room. But by this time, you know, alcohol don't get it. I got to get some crack. So I asked him to borrow some money. He said, man, you got paid yesterday? You smoked all your motherfucking money. You ain't going to smoke mine. I said, man, stop playing. Give me some money. He said, I'm serious. So I stormed out of his room like a little bitch. Went next door trying to think of some bright idea how to get some crack. Remembered I had left the 18-pack, so I knocked on the door. By this time, he got this machete, and he answers the door, and everything in me reverted back to when I had got stabbed 8 times. And I grabbed this guy, and I rammed his ass into the wall, put his silhouette in the drywall, the knife fell out his hand, hit his leg, I grabbed the money and ran the fuck out the door. And when I ran out the door, the guy who was living upstairs saw me. And when he came down the steps, he put 2 and 2. He's bleeding, he got money, he robbed him. So that's what he did. He called 911 and he told him. 911 and he told him. By the time I got back, I got me a little crack deal again. That was 13, 14, y'all. Shook his ass down. Come out with the Ziploc bag. Had about 520s in that bag. Hit the jackpot. Got to my room, but I noticed the door frame had been kicked off. Common sense say don't go in there. That plastic bag said, fuck that. So when I went in there, I emptied all the crack on the table. Heard something say, ch-ch-ch. Suspect appears to be smoking crack cocaine. Had not hit anything yet. Looked to the right and seen the officer. Everything say run. That crack said, fuck that. So I ripped one open real quick. And I hit one. And when I hit that motherfucker, that orange, them stems, them screens, turned burnt orange. By this time, he had walked across the front porch from the window to the door of my room. He asked me, are you smoking crack cocaine? I make eye contact with him. I remember I got the straight shooter in my hand. Not outside my pants, inside my drawer. Up under my groin. By this time, I feel like I'm 7 fucking feet tall. I don't know if it was me frying me or that good motherfucking crap. But I was high as a motherfucker. So by this time, nature has to take its place. I had to breathe. I did not want to let this shit go. But nature took its course. And I exhale and let the smoke come out of my nostrils. And I swear to God, I feel like a bull And when that smoke hit the floor and came back up, it came into a mushroom like somebody had dropped the motherfucking atomic bomb. My hands went up like this, and I knew I was free as a motherfucker. Because when I went on to this journey, I said the only thing that stopped me was a divine intervention. And when I prayed to God that I needed people with directions and instruction, he sent me that officer. That officer carried me to jail. And when I went to jail, I knew how to jail. So when I got there, I was familiar on familiar ground. They had a prayer circle at this jail up in Marlboro. And I got in that prayer circle. They had it at 12 o'clock lunchtime and 7:30 at night. And me getting in prayer circle, God saw something in me, and they gave me a pocket Bible. And I know this is not a religious program, but if you got a problem with it, fuck you. He gave me that pocket Bible. And I began to read that Bible. And I heard them announce, H&I was bringing in a meeting. And I remember, I used to go to meetings. I knew what H&I was. So I went to that meeting that night. And I began to give me a motherfucking chance. I have not used since November the 4th, 2001. And I know in my heart of hearts, it was all due to God giving me those twins to allow me to see the wreckage that I was finally doing to people, doing crack, because I didn't feel I was truly harming anyone. And in the process of going to meetings, the guy finally told the truth. So they were going to release me tomorrow. And I was in the meetings. And the guy said, "What the fuck is wrong with you? You're usually perky and bubbly." I cried like a little baby and I said, "Man, I'm going home tomorrow. And I'm afraid that I'm going to do what I always do to me, and I don't know how to fucking live." See, I can do this shit in here because crack wasn't that plentiful in here. So the guy told me, he said, "Man, you've been coming to meetings every day. We bring meetings in here. I know you're reading the literature because I can hear you sharing because we speak a different language." And see, he heard me saying shit out of those IP pamphlets that they were giving me, as well as reading that Bible. And I was changing in a house of faith. See, I wasn't interested in running a store. I wasn't interested in learning, jockeying for phone time and watching video, playing dominoes and board games. I spent all my quiet time reading literature in jail. So when I shared with that guy, he said, "Look, walk your ass to a meeting. Don't ask nobody to give you a ride. Find a meeting and walk your ass there so you won't have no excuses why you can't get there. Make sure it's close to where you live." My brother allowed me to lay on his floor. And I walked down the hill. I walked straight through the battlefield. 50th Street, that's Lincoln Heights. If a lot of y'all don't know what that is, that's the project. They sell everything there. I walked straight. I live 49th and Hunt, and I walked straight up 50th through Lincoln Heights to St. Louis. And I went in that meeting. I raised my motherfucking hand. And man, I'm telling you, I felt safe as a motherfucker when I got to that meeting. Because I seen a whole lot of familiar faces and a lot of familiar pain when I walked that room. And I raised my hand and I said, "My name is Frank and I'm an addict and I don't know how to live and I just got out of jail." And the guy said, "I'll be your sponsor." And he had 15 years and that was good enough for me. He hadn't done no step work. That was revealed after I did step work, because I told you I came in here and I hadn't done some things in that 3.5 years. Step work is a sponsor. Getting a sponsor was two of the things. I did not get in service. I got in service 60 days in the program. I didn't need nobody to tell me to get in service. I was familiar with the program, so it was some things I knew internally that I didn't do, I began to do on my own because I wanted to live. And look, I went to these meetings, and I want to speed this up because I want to talk about these twins. These twins, 5 months in the program, I went to a meeting, and a guy said he had custody of 5 children. And I asked him, "Y'all say Y'all don't give a fuck with my, where I came. All y'all was interested in what my problem was. And I asked him, I said, how the hell did you get your kids? Because he was a single father. And he told me, and he walked me through. He prepared me. And let me tell y'all, I got custody of them twins. Because y'all need to know they went in St. Anne's Infernal. They took them twins. And I'm talking about an act of addiction they took them. So I had to do some work. And I obtained those, I got custody of those twins myself. And when I got custody of those twins, I used to carry their ass on the bus to St. Louis. And people used to help me carry them. And they used to, look, I didn't even know how to fucking change a diaper. Warm up a bottle. But y'all said, y'all didn't give a fuck where I came from. All y'all want to know is with my problem. And I knew ladies had babies in here. They showed me how to change my twin. They showed me how to feed my twin. They showed me how to keep those appointments. And before you know it, a year had passed. And I'm telling you, he seemed so fit in me, he blessed me with another baby and gave me custody of two more of my children. Talking about that motherfucker who used to live in that cardboard box. Talking about that motherfucker who was matted on one side and the other side looked like he stuck his finger in an electric shock. I'm talking about that motherfucker who was so hungry he licked that saliva from that horse. I'm talking about that motherfucker who was so damn crazy out of his mind, took that crack stem and put it in his own groin to hide from somebody who already fucking seen it. I'm talking about it. Today I own my own business. I got custody of five of my children. I put one of my kids through college, one in college, and two get ready to go to college. And this is just my shit. When I hear people with Clean Time share they're tired and they want some help in service department, how the hell can you be tired of doing God's work? After he saved a wretch like me. So I'm in service, and that's nothing to nobody with Clean Time. I'm just saying, we got to watch when we feed the new baby. You don't get tired of being grateful for what God freed up for us. The only way you can keep it is to give it the fuck back. I'm an addict. My name is Bryce. Thank you.